Hello everyone, this is J.D. Fascinetti, and you are listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. We are delighted today to welcome again Dr. Scott Struthers, who's the chairman of Crinetics Pharmaceuticals. Lots of exciting things going on at Crinetics, so it's always great to have the opportunity to talk with Dr. Struthers to get the latest on all of the developments. Crinetics is a pharmaceutical company based in San Diego, California, dedicated to developing much-needed therapies for people with rare endocrine diseases, and is currently developing medications for acromegaly, neuroendocrine tumors, Cushing's disease, congenital hyperinsulinism, and congenital adrenal hyperplasia. We're going to talk at length about these projects currently in the Crinetics pipeline. For those of you who are new to our podcast, this is the third podcast with Dr. Struthers, and it is always a thrill for me to chat with him as he shares his remarkable knowledge of pituitary and endocrine science. Welcome, Dr. Struthers, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us again. It's always a pleasure to welcome you to our microphones. As I should tell you that your podcasts are very popular and well-received with our audience, so it's great to have the opportunity to chat with someone in the thick of things, so to speak, when it comes to the development of drugs and therapies that benefits pituitary patients and NET patients.
Thank you, JD. It's always fun to talk to you, and I'm glad we can provide some useful information out to all the pituitary patients out there.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I know you're extremely busy. So let's start with a subject that's on everyone's mind. How has your work been affected by COVID this year?
Well, like most other places, our corporate headquarters has been very restricted, so that most of us are working from home, and only the people working in the laboratories that need the facilities are there.
Yes.
And then more importantly, we were amazed at how the patients and investigators in our acromegaly clinical trials around the world were able to continue to participate and contribute to the advancement of new treatments for acromegaly, even though that was through the height of the COVID period. We had study coordinators and investigators going out to patients' houses to make sure they could make study visits. Even in the height of the pandemic in Italy, patients still made their visits. So it's just a tremendous, it's inspiring, actually, how much people did to continue to advance the possibility of a new med for acromegaly.
Yeah, because it's I could imagine this, even when you have to have people go to other places and get out of their house, like you're saying, at the height of the pandemic, the effort that everybody has to make, the extra effort that everybody has to make.
That's wonderful. And on top of everything else, right?
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear, because I'm assuming that nothing really has slowed down. Everything keeps moving at a regular pace.
It sometimes feels like even at a faster pace, because there's no downtime of getting in a plane and flying over to, New York or Europe. So it's just you get on one call with the friends in Europe in the morning, and maybe your friends or collaborators in China at night. And so it makes for some long days, actually.
I think work is going to change tremendously after this. We may go back to normal in a lot of things, but many things are going to be different after the pandemic is over, I would guess.
Well, one of the big things for us as a growing company is we've added 36 new employees since the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And because, we've got all these drugs, we're trying to move forward and get out to patients. Mm-hmm. But we stopped the idea that people should move to where our headquarters is in California and just letting them work from home, because if you're going to be talking from Zoom across town or across the world, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so, you know, there's a few advantages. We've been able to find some great people who, for one reason or another, you know, wanted to stay where they're at, which allowed us to grow the company perhaps even faster than we might have before.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. Yeah, it's amazing how much, how much people have adapted and the positive things of that adaptation that has brought. So let's talk a little bit about the pipeline, the Crinetics pipeline. You have four projects in the pipeline in different stages of development. So tell us about them. What's going on with all of that, if you can give us an overview.
Sure. Well, it's four that people see, and there's a lot more going on beneath the surface.
You have another one that you had undisclosed.
Yeah, and we're super excited. Our once-a-day oral drug, paltusotine for acromegaly, finished the phase 2 study showing it could keep patients with acromegaly at the same IGF levels that they were on when they were taking the depot injections. We've got a drug for Cushing's and congenital adrenal hyperplasia that's going into phase 1 clinical trials any day. And another drug for people with too much insulin going into the clinic early next year. So it's very exciting times. And now that those drugs are moving towards the clinic, our discovery group can move on to the next set of patients who need something new. And we've got some ideas that are cooking there.
Yeah. So I noticed that, is that the drug on for ACTH antagonist for Cushing's? Is that which one is that one?
Yeah, the ACTH antagonist is just about to start phase 1 clinical trials, and we'll be looking at how well it can suppress cortisol in healthy volunteers as a way to quickly understand how well it would work in patients with Cushing's disease or congenital adrenal hyperplasia. Mm-hmm. And then if that is positive, we'll go in and do some clinical work probably starting in 2022 in patient populations.
Yeah. So when we last talked, we were also talking about a pediatric hyperinsulinism drug, if I'm not mistaken. How is that moving? That's such an amazing project, isn't it?
Oh, it's a heartbreaking group of patients. Their community is also super well organized, like the pituitary community.
Yeah.
And I subscribe to their Facebook feeds and Twitter feeds. And almost every day there's a new baby and a story about the baby and the struggles they're having or the things they've overcome or the birthdays. And to think that we've got something that may be able to help them is just, it warms my heart.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure. No doubt. That's wonderful. So let's talk a little bit about, or specifically about paltusotine.
Sure.
I learned to say that. I kind of beg the worst time with it.
Well, you know, drug names are never meant to be easy for some reason.
Not at all. So this is a drug for acromegaly, like you mentioned. And it's the one that is farthest ahead in your pipeline. So for our listeners that remember our previous podcast, this was the molecule that we call the CRN-00808.
That's right.
We've been working on. So I understand there's some very exciting developments, and to the extent that you can share any of it with our acromegaly audience, it would be wonderful. So you've got
sure. So maybe just to explain the name as a way to start.
Yeah,
so
when
we make a molecule, we give it a number, and we give a new number to each molecule we make. So it was 808 because it was the 808th molecule we made because the first 807 weren't good enough.
Yes.
And then as you move forward and you start to go into clinical studies, you ask the international bodies for a name. And we named it paltusotine because it's a conversation about how to name it. And the important part about the name is the suffix, the sotine suffix is unique to paltusotine because the suffix defines a class of drugs. And so there's no other molecule in this class of drugs yet. So it's a first in class. We're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
But then since I think our last podcast, as I mentioned in the earlier part of the conversation, we've now finished our phase 2 studies in acromegaly patients. We had more than 60 participants from around the world, everywhere from Eastern Europe to Brazil to Australia, New Zealand, and across the U.S. And the exciting thing for me was this was a switching study where these were patients who were on the injectable somatostatins, mm-hmm. you know, octreotide, lanreotide, depots. We switched them to paltusotine oral once a day. Just take it in the morning, and then did that for 13 weeks, and we're adjusting the dose during that period. And then look at your IGF levels at the end of the 13 weeks compared to when you're on the injectable depots. And on average, IGF levels were the same with a once-a-day oral as the monthly depot injections.
So that gives you a tremendous indication that it works very well.
Oh, it was great. And, you know, it should give patients confidence as they think about enrolling in our phase 3 trials that you're not taking a huge risk about loss of control. Now, it's still an experimental drug and there's things to learn, but it seems to be working really well. And the safety profile was excellent. So we're seeing a very benign safety profile, some symptoms of acromegaly still, as you might expect. Some things that look a lot like what the injectable somatostatins, a little bit of GI upset, but more so in volunteers who've never had a somatostatin analog than in people who've been on it for a while.
So when you say, sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
When you say, just to understand, when you say safety profile, that means that it's something that doesn't hurt something else.
That's right. You know, so we didn't have anybody drop out of the study because of safety reasons. We didn't have any worsening of disease. We measure that super carefully. There's lab tests, there's EKGs. It's one of the reasons these trials are so intensive is because you're looking so hard at safety. But we're feeling really good about the safety profile. And that's, you know, you combine that with the ability to keep IGF under control. We're feeling pretty darn good about this drug.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So now as you move into phase 3, I'm assuming there's always phase 3 challenges. And how long is that phase you anticipate being?
Well, I think the treatment period will be about 9 months. And that allows us to make sure we see stable control of the disease for a long period of time. And then patients will be eligible to enroll in an open label extension, so they might be able to continue for the next several years on drugs. And that's to both provide them a benefit for participating in the study, but also to provide the regulators with some long-term experience on the drug. Mm-hmm. Now, the duration of the study itself will all depend on how fast patients enroll in the study. And we'll be doing this around the world. Typically, it takes a year or more to find enough patients to fill out a clinical study. And I challenge your listeners, they are the ones that can change this. They can make it go faster if they're willing to sign up and try this out and work with us and the investigators around the world. Usually, they're normal pituitary docs to help us test out this drug.
Well, we'll sign up to help. Any way possible to get to facilitate that and get the word out to people to definitely consider it and participate, because it's such a, you know, if you think about it, one thing that patients can do to move science is this, it's participate in these trials. And so I know sometimes it can
Absolutely.
Be taxing, but it just, we can't stress enough how important that is.
Well, and the thing about the phase 2 trials is they tend to be pretty intensive. But phase 3, since it's going to be longer, it can be a little more relaxed and it won't be quite as intensive. And I hope it's not much more work than your normal visit to the physician every month for a depot, maybe even less. Yeah. The other things patients can do, though, I know that the acromegaly community, and maybe you're involved as well, are working on this discussion with the FDA this winter.
Yes, I'm involved in that. I'm in one of the panels. That's a wonderful Wonderful opportunity to get the word out, yes.
And let the FDA know that this is important. It's important to a lot of people, and better options are needed.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they may misunderstand that, you know, it's already a well-treated disease. And you and I know that there could be a lot better options out
there. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, the amazing thing is that if this is working, even if you're in a trial, is working for you, the advantages are so intense. Even for the people that you think that there'd be more people wanting to be in the trial, you know, to take advantage of that as early as possible.
So. Yeah, I think so. And it's also interesting, you know, you learn about the process, you have extra care with your nurses and physicians. And as you say, it's something that we can all do as individuals to advance the practice of medicine.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about COVID earlier. I think, you know, some of the real heroes are the people who signed up for those COVID vaccine trials. And they enrolled quickly and allowed us to now see that these vaccines are very effective in record time.
Yeah.
And that may have a big impact on all of us in the coming months.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing because I remember before COVID and when I had the pleasure to spend a couple of days with your team and learning a lot about vaccine development and drug development and therapy, new therapies, and it is how long these things take and how amazing it is to see 9 months of a vaccine development, you know, today with the Pfizer vaccine and the AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
And I don't know the ins and outs of any of that, but it seems to me that's just an amazing feat, no? To get this.
Well, yeah, it is. And especially if you know the context of, like, some of the things we're working on. Crinetics is now an 11-year-old company. We've been working on this for 11 years. So it doesn't come easy.
No.
But in reality, I started working on this when I was 18 years old and a freshman undergrad. I don't know if I ever told you that.
You did, yeah. It's just amazing. Yeah.
But so it was super rewarding for me to see that after all these decades, we can really make a new drug based on the things we've been learning for many decades that can help a group of patients. And now we need to extend that out to not just the acromegaly patients, but the same drug, paltusotine, I hope will be useful for patients with neuroendocrine tumors like, you know, we know Steve Jobs is one of the more famous victims.
Yeah, that succumbed to that, yeah. So I know, you know, the currently all of the treatments for acromegaly, which is mainly, like you're saying, with injectables, and there's a new drug out in the market for an oral version. And I know that paltusotine is different, but can you explain to us a little the difference a little bit between paltusotine and this other oral drug?
Well, yeah, the other oral drug's called Mycapssa. It's developed by a company called Chiasma. And I was just on a panel with their CEO and the CEO of another endocrine company for an investor conference yesterday. And I think it's actually important that all our companies help show that there's an unmet need in endocrinology and help advance the field. And so congratulations to them. They brought an oral option to a group of patients who could really use something better than what we've got now.
Yeah.
But we're fundamentally different. What the Chiasma folks have done is they managed to take octreotide, which we all know, and get a little bit of it absorbed if you take it orally. And so for 60% of the patients that try that drug, they're able to do pretty well on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's great. But it's twice a day with some fasting required around it. And you still have a bit of a rise for most people in IGF, but it's still a step forward.
Yeah.
Now, we take another approach. Our approach is to go back to very first principles, engineer a completely new molecule from scratch that's designed to be highly orally available, have a long half-life. That means if you take it once, it lasts all day, maybe even lasts into the next day. And so then that means you could take it once a day. And when we now see our data from the acromegaly group, we see that you can switch from the injectables to this and still keep your IGF levels right where they were on your previous monthly depot injections, which are not much fun from what I understand, nor much fun trying to get there to get them.
Yes.
And we've made another number of other improvements that make it easier to prescribe for physicians and for patients and, you know, worrying about taking it with other meds. They're, you know, we're very clean and play well with other drugs. And a lot of this comes in what I call drug craftsmanship. You saw our chemistry labs.
Yes.
It took us 807 molecules to find one that was good enough. So we put a lot of attention into this molecule.
To me, it's such an amazing, the discovery process that you guys go through to understand if this works, it doesn't. And the decision point that says, okay, I'm moving on with this. Because it's also, you know, I know you have a lot of information, but you go, you're not sure this is going to work, but you're moving forward based on, you know, all the knowledge. It's just a fascinating part of science, in my opinion.
Well, it's an incredibly rewarding area to work in. And, you know, the science is interesting, and the impact, if you make it work, is wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let me ask you, what's some of the, I know that's a lot of these things you can't talk about, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So tell me a little
bit. Pretty open.
What's, well, you know, I understand. What's on the horizon for Crinetics beyond what you're already working on? Anything that you can tell us about in terms of the discovery part?
Sure. Well, you know, we need to remember that the endocrine pathways control almost all the functions in the body in one way or another and influence them. It helps us maintain what's called homeostasis, which is just our normal functioning physiology. And what that means is that if something's wrong, maybe there's a way with peptides to set it back to normal. And so we have lots of drugs that have come out of endocrinology that we don't think of as endocrinology. Most of the blood pressure drugs that we take for hypertension came out of an understanding of a peptide called angiotensin and its role in the kidney and cardiovascular system. Many of our drugs in cancers, like breast cancer and, breast is the big one, prostate, are treated by drugs that came out of reproductive endocrinology. So we've got all kinds of new drugs to make in endocrine systems that are really well established. I'm very interested in also how you take these endocrine drugs and use them in various types of cancers, because the different parts of the body tell each other what to do by sending a hormonal signal.
Yeah, the chemical signal, sure. Yeah.
That's what an endocrine system is. It's hormones talking to each other. But that also means that each tissue is marked by different receptors for these hormones, and you can use those to target drugs to treat specific types of cancers. And I think there's some applications of what we're doing beyond just neuroendocrine tumors into other oncology. I've spent a lot of time in reproductive medicine. There's still a lot of gaps in that area.
Mm-hmm.
The parathyroid hormone and the parathyroid gland and the parathyroid hormones are very interesting. In parathyroid disease in patients with multiple endocrine neoplasia, you know, there's an excess of parathyroid hormone and no real good way to treat that.
Yeah.
That seems like a good opportunity.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a new thyroid drug since the 1940s.
Wow, that's incredible.
And it's super common.
Yeah.
So we've got ideas of drugs for a dozen different new drugs, ideas for a dozen different new drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still a small company, and we've got to pick the first couple to do, and then we do the next couple and the next couple.
Yeah, I'm assuming that as you grow, then you can devote more time to discovery. It's just a great dynamic that says the bigger you get, the better, you know, your the drugs in the market do. The more of discovery you can do to solve other problems, use that intelligence to to do it. That's
wonderful. Well, it's experience and it's some financial resources. Sure. I mean, when we eventually start selling these drugs, we'll be able to take that money and go back to help the next generation of patients. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get the word out to people, but I guarantee you will not see Super Bowl ads from us wasting money that should have been spent on research.
I get it. We can do that for you, you know? I mean, one of the things that I keep, like we always talk about things that keep you up at night, but I always think about how could we get the endocrine word outside of what of the world that people are interested. So it's on the radar and people are getting diagnosed earlier than they should be, you know, to solve so much of the related comorbidities and all of those related issues. So.
Yeah, diagnosis and awareness is such a huge problem. Yeah. It's especially in acromegaly, right? If you suspect acromegaly, you can diagnose it in a few days.
Yes.
The problem is, you might go 5 years before you suspect that that's the issue.
It's being on the radar, I call it. You know, if the physician puts it on the list of possibilities earlier, and the patient is smart to ask maybe some questions that might focus that doctor earlier into say, hey, let's run one of these and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the dynamic you need, and it's not a complicated dynamic. It's not that difficult. It's just, how do you do it efficiently? Like you say, running a Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. But it's true. This is a common problem for most rare diseases because, you know, your average physician in a community practice may not see a patient with one of these rare diseases. And it's just hard to place it. I'm kind of curious, and I know my friends and Mass General and others are really interested in the role of AI in helping diagnose these things faster. And that may be an interesting question for us to be asking as a group.
Yes. Yeah. We would be really interested in getting involved in that, because that's my, one of the reasons why we started Pituitary World was to see if it affect that time that it takes, you know, to diagnose people with all pituitary diseases. So.
Yeah, it's a great mission. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, Scott, thank you. I just want to thank you very much for spending the time with us today, and best wishes for this new drug to come to market as fast as possible. And we're here to help any way we can.
Well, thank you. I super appreciate you helping us get the word out and just the educational efforts in general. So I hope you and all our pituitary friends out there, you know, have a good holidays and
happy holidays to you. And we hope that next year we can get together in the not too distant future.
I'm really looking forward to that very much.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks again.
Thanks, JT. Good to see you.
Our thanks to Dr. Struthers and the Crinetics team for facilitating these educational podcasts and making this information available. Please stay tuned for more interesting podcasts and articles. Pituitary World News is a non-profit organization dedicated to educate and inform and to reduce the time it takes to diagnosis. If you'd like to help, you can do so by making a contribution. Support comes from our readers and listeners. So if you'd like to contribute, please go to pituitaryworldnews.org, click on the Get Involved button, and follow the easy directions. Thank you, and thank you for listening.